You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 422 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we're coming to you again in separate locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, still, believe it or not, home of the first place, Seattle Mariners.
I'm coming to you from Redwood, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion, Seattle Seahawks.
Lead is down to six games, but it's still a lead. We're still doing it that way, even though on today, when the Storm celebrated their 25th anniversary at the game today against the Connecticut Sun, we really should be highlighting home of the four-time WNBA champion.
Yeah, go back to
Storm.
That. I mean, I guess we'll give it to the Mariners for now. But it's also CJ Procise edition of the Pelton Cast.
Well, I was going to say, first off, my first thought that came to mind, because obviously 90s sports, we're very 90s pilled when it comes to jersey numbers. The Ricky Pierce edition. And also low-key, the Eddie Johnson edition. I believe for a half season, he wore 22, when both of those guys were on the team together, because he got here a little before Ricky Pierce did.
Who was it who was wearing 20 when Gary Payton couldn't wear number 20 at first?
Quentin Daly. Sonics legend Quentin Daly.
Okay.
That's a great Pelton Cast trivia question. I probably was in, if I go look up when we did the Pelton Cast trivia the one time. That probably was one of the questions, because I love that trivia question so much.
That's a good one.
But again, with the 25th anniversary Storm on the mind, it's the Betty Lennox edition.
Oh, deuces. Love it. I actually
B-Money,
really like that one.
B-Money walked in right behind me to the game today at Clyde
really?
French Arena. And let me tell you, she somehow looks younger than she did in 2004 when she was WNBA Finals MVP.
I love Betty Lennox.
She looked like she could get out there against the Connecticut Sun and give them 18 points. Even though it's a better defensive team, the Connecticut Sun in 2024 than back in 2024 when the Storm beat them 2-1 in the WNBA Finals.
There we go.
So, there you go.
You brought that one full circle.
I was trying to. Should we get into this week's toasts?
Absolutely.
It's actually a very somber set of toasts this weekend, I must say. First off, we're remembering Dave Williams, a product of Lincoln High School in Tacoma and UW, who later became the first player signed by the Seahawks after he died last Wednesday at age 78. Williams won a high school state championship in hurdles and competed in both football and track at UW, where he was a four-time All-American in track and field. A UW Hall of Famer, Williams was also first team All-AAWU as a receiver in 1965, scoring 10 touchdowns and setting a then Husky record with 795 receiving yards that season. Williams went on to play seven seasons in the NFL, was signed by the Seahawks in 1976 after 2 years out of the league, sadly did not have an opportunity to make the team after suffering a career-ending knee injury that offseason at a track meet. But still a legendary figure in local sports circles.
I will tell you, I knew almost nothing about Dave Williams, but he's like one of the most Pelton Cast players of all time.
if it had been Seattle's Lincoln High School, there was a Lincoln High School in Seattle on play. Right?
Look, we're counting Tacoma as South Seattle.
Oh, of course.
If Federal Way is North Tacoma, Tacoma is South Seattle. Thank you. But
that's some Pelton Cast geography.
From going to high school in South Seattle, playing at UW and being the first Seahawk ever.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Dave Williams is the original Jermaine Kearse.
He really is the original, but Jermaine Kearse wasn't out there winning state high school championships in hurdles.
Well, Jermaine Kearse won Super Bowls here.
He did. Super Bowl. But that's why he's the original. Jermaine Kearse was the evolutionary Dave Williams. We're also this week sending our well wishes to former Jake One teammate Cameron Brink, who suffered an ACL tear in the Sparks loss at Connecticut last week, ending her rookie season. She was off to a great start, so this is disappointing to see, but we know that Cam Brink will be back out there next season and again dominating defensively.
I was definitely bummed about this one. The way that Cameron Brink was playing so far and just this rookie class that the WNBA had, having her go down at the beginning of the season, unexpected and brutal overall.
Yeah. We'll probably talk a little more about this class later on because Caitlin Clark is coming back to town later this week,
There we go.
fresh off her duel against Angel Reese on Sunday. But in happier news, this year's Champions of Change All-Star game will be Friday night at Climate Pledge Arena. And Jake One, third Pelton brother Jake One, will again be playing
He
this
got
year.
invited back.
Yeah.
There we
And
go.
I saw his trainer Wu Sang in the Instagram comments calling for more minutes for
His
Jake
trainer
out there. Yes.
at basketball? No.
I think so.
Not
I don't know
golf?
exactly.
That's hilarious.
I
Calling for more
mean,
minutes though.
golf
I
is Jake's primary sport.
I think we heard last year what he put up a couple of threes, maybe one.
I can't remember exactly what the stat line was.
Okay, this year we need to get Jake buckets though. Bucket at the very least, like the amount of Super Bowls Jermaine Kearse won.
It was Coach GP who was not giving him enough playing time, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
You don't question Coach GP. It's more of like a give him more minutes generally and not a give him more minutes specifically, because you would not say that to Gary Payton.
Definitely not to his face.
Who is GP is not one of the coaches this year, right? Who are the coaches?
I don't believe he is this year. I would have to look that up. So give me some time, and we can maybe come back to that.
I just love that Jake One has become part of this circuit or whatever, and looking at how like famous and publicly known the other people were, and then it's like Jake One, music producer.
Gary is back as a head coach this year. Detlef Schrempf will be coaching against him.
Oh no. Maybe we hope that Jake ends up on the Della Shrimp team.
Some players participating this year. We've got Brandon Marshall, Brian Walters, who was in the first game that I saw. Charles Cross apparently will be out there.
Charles Cross, I was just an offensive lineman in the paint. I don't know. I don't see offensive linemen as being great hoopers, but I feel like the size and physicality might be really, really helpful in a game without probably any other big men.
I mean, obviously, this is organized by Michael Bennett, who I don't think plays anymore after he gave it a little bit of a try the first year. Doug Baldwin Jr., Cliff Averill, Red Bryant will be out there.
There we go.
I'm seeing Rodney Stuckey and Will Conroy, new USC assistant coach, Will Conroy. Marshawn Beauchamp is listed. We'll see if he does.
I
Mario
saw
Bailey, Wilfred
that.
Tatupu.
Again, how wildly disparate these things are, because they're mostly football players, and then you're naming random like NBA players also.
Well, in fairness, I'm highlighting the top players out there.
I mean, if Marshawn Beauchamp wanted to go off in this game, he could.
Oh, without question. I mean, I didn't see last year's game. I was out of town. I'm going to be flying back, unfortunately, this year, so we'll again be missing it. I saw the first game, and like for three quarters, it was like, let's mess around, and the quality of play was pretty low. And then in the fourth quarter, I don't think I mentioned Sherm, is also someone who's participating. Then like the football players who have basketball background, and then the basketball players got serious in the fourth quarter, and it became a totally different game. So I anticipate that's about what's going to happen again this year.
Okay, well, I think this is also a fitting time to talk about why you're going to be out of town. Are we good on Champions of Change? I guess give us the details on that one more time.
So that's Friday night at Climate Pledge Arena.
I'm also out of town.
Well, there you go.
I
The
feel like this
Pelton
always
brothers
happens.
will not be making an appearance. Yeah, the timing opposite the NBA draft is not good because, again, I will be heading back east to participate in an NBA draft live stream, the Hoop Collective, live during the 2024 NBA draft first round.
Okay, and where can we find that?
YouTube, ESPN Watch. Twitter, I think all of those will offer that stream. So we'll certainly put it in the Discord, probably try and get some sort of link on the Instagram as well.
Okay. All right. Enough of that. Tell us about the draft, because I feel like this is the draft that I've heard the least about of almost any draft in the last 5 years or so. I couldn't even tell you who the consensus number one pick is.
Well, there is no consensus number one pick. That's probably the reason you couldn't.
Okay.
So the expectation at this point is that Atlanta at number one, which the Hawks have the number one pick, is choosing between French forward Zachary Risacher and UConn center Donovan Clingan.
Okay.
We've talked about Clingan comes out amazing in my draft projections. Richechet does not. Then Washington is expected to pick Alex Sarr, another French center who played last year in the Australian NBL at number two. So it's weird because Richechet and Clingan are considered
It's not
guys
like it's like a 1-2
in the mix
it's
at
like
number one.
Number two, that they know who they're going to take.
They may not go in the top three if they don't go number one.
Either of those players. Klingon's not. Who's the third pick?
Because if Houston doesn't trade out of the third pick, the expectation is they will take the top-rated player on my board, Kentucky guard Reed Sheppard.
And then who's number four?
So one of the... Then it's kind of San Antonio picks fourth.
Where does Klingon go, though? Let's say that he doesn't go number one. Let's say it's Richechet number one. Where does Donovan Klingon fall to? Because San Antonio probably doesn't need him.
Exactly. Unclear. Also, like, there's been talk that Portland, which is at number seven, may be interested in trading up to get Klingon. Also, Memphis, it would be very logical for them to trade up.
I've watched him play in a single game, basically. But, like, I thought he was pretty awesome when he played.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to be an amazing defensive player. Offensively, it's interesting because it would be a little easier if he were like a really good run and jump athlete like Derek Lively II. He's you know, pretty light on his feet and good in a straight line, but he doesn't jump particularly well, Klingon. So that's kind of the question mark, I think, from scouts. But you look at Memphis, which is picky at ninth. They traded Steven Adams midway through last season. You know, don't really have that classic starting center to put next to Jaren Jackson Jr. They'd be a logical team to move up and try to get Klingon if he slid a little bit. And then Portland, like I said, has also been mentioned, even though they have DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah, DeAndre Ayton's not like the center of the future for them.
But with Reed Sheppard, one of the things I did, so this year's draft projections are out for me. They came out on Sunday. And one of the things I did in the intro was take a look at which teams have drafted most aligned with my projections in terms of getting the most value by my projections relative to where their pick was and what you'd expect. And okay. Number one on that list, by a wide margin, is the Houston Rockets.
Yes.
So Tari Eason was high up there for me. Elperon Şengün, obviously.
Now, are you sure that you liked a player from Seattle?
It's unusual for me to do so. I know. Yeah. And then last year when they got Cam Whitmore with the 20th pick and he was like number three or number two or number three in my projections going into the draft.
So Houston he's almost certainly going to be available for them at pick three.
There's not been a lot of talk about him going top two. Now, Houston also, you know, they have a lot of young players, could look to trade for a veteran, trade down, something like that. Maybe try to trade down and hope Reed Sheppard is still there a little lower because, you know, Reed Sheppard is definitely like the analytics types love him and the scouts are like, we like him, but not to the same degree.
Who would you comp Reed Sheppard to? He's number one on your like draft big board.
Yes. It's tough to say, like statistically, he looks kind of similar to Derek White, I would say, with better shooting, but he's not the same kind of one-on-one defender that Derek White is. So that's, I think, the biggest question.
How good is Derek
have
White? Him. Like you're comping the number one player on your board in the draft to Derek White.
Well, first off, better shooting Derek White. Second off, Derek White finished, I believe, number two on the Celtics in playoff warp.
Wow. Okay.
But Derek White's awesome.
All right. Fair enough.
He's unquestionably a top 40 player in the league. Maybe should have been an all-star this year.
All right. Is that considered a hot take?
Not really. I mean, J.J. Redick was advocating for him to be an all-star, so.
That's head coach J.J. Redick to you.
That's
thank
true.
you.
L.A. Lakers head coach, J.J. Redick. Third Felton brother, J.J. Redick.
Whether he knows it or not. You're also going to be doing a draft show. Are you going to be at the draft for day two?
I'm going to be at the draft for day two, but I will not be on.
Have you ever been to the draft before?
No.
This is your first ever time going.
But it's not going to be like the full Barclays. Full Barclays Center draft. They're just doing it out of the ESPN studios on day two.
Really? The draft is happening at the ESPN studios?
Yes.
In New York or in Bristol?
In New York.
In New York.
The Seaport studios.
So you're going from day one, the day of the first round of the draft, you'll be in Bristol.
Yes.
Day two, you're going to New York, and that's where they're actually having the draft at day two.
Correct.
Okay.
So I don't know what this means in terms of who's going to be there or what it's going to mean, but you know, I'm
But
going to be in New York, so
most
why not?
likely, Bronny will be selected in day two.
That seems very likely.
What team is going to draft Bronny?
I mean, probably it's going to be the Lakers. It's just, I think, a question of how much do they have to pay to move up, you know, from 55 if another team threatens to take him or does take him.
Do you think teams are smart enough to do that? It's a thing that in real life, I feel like actually
Sam Hinkie did it
happens.
once.
Did I feel like you end up being, it's like an unwritten rule that you just kind of don't want to be the asshole or whatever. Like everybody knows the Lakers want, but like at that point, I know that you don't necessarily need to like bow down to clutch, but it's kind of like you just don't want to piss them off.
Why?
Unnecessarily. You get like a protected first round pick or something, like a deeply protected first round pick.
You'd
for
probably
them to
get
move up.
Cash in a future second, I would say.
Yeah.
So.
Is there, if he were to be drafted by the Suns, does that change anything for LeBron? Is there any ability for LeBron in
LeBron's going to
Phoenix?
play for them? No, not really. I mean, the only way, like, from a logistical cap standpoint, if you throw out everything else, okay, so LeBron would have to pick up his player option for $51.4 million because otherwise Phoenix can't offer him more than the minimum as a free agent. And
What
even
is do you
and if he picked it
from
up,
everything I've heard about LeBron, he is not going to play for the minimum, I guess is what I'll say.
I agree. Phoenix cannot trade for LeBron James. It is unless they shed at least $18 million on salary. Above and beyond them re-signing their own free agents, they would have to shed an additional $20 million in salary, basically.
Okay, fair enough.
And then they could trade Kevin Durant or Bradley Beal or Devin Booker for LeBron James.
Okay, so that's not happening.
It is not. But currently, it is not even a legal trade. Like, there is not a legal way for the Phoenix Suns to trade for LeBron James under any circumstance.
LeBron's supposed cheapness, thriftiness... is actually like my favorite thing about his personality.
It's most relatable.
Yeah. Anything else of note for the draft?
I think those are the main things.
Who is your sleeper type player? Every year you have a player. You had your Shingoons. You had your Jokic's. Who is your? Those are the. I'm only saying the hits. I don't know who your biggest misses were of those types of players, but none.
Who's the guy that? It's harder to remember the guys who were huge misses because they're out of the league. There was a guy Golden State drafted from Cincinnati. I want to say his last name was Evans, Jacob Evans, maybe. That did not pan out. Golden State's another team that's high up in terms of drafting, according to my projections. It worked very well with Brandon Pajemski, not so well with Jacob Evans.
Do you? Well, I mean, what did they take? Was it a second round pick?
No, he was a first rounder.
Okay. Do you think that those teams are paying attention to your writing, or do you think it just so happens that their analytics departments are finding similar things that you?
Certain of those teams, I mean, my projections are publicly available, and I also, you know, have connections in various front offices, so they'll know what my projections are. But I think it's mostly that they just happen to match up pretty well to what those teams are doing.
I mean, it's also like, if internally their stats say Brandon Tarr or whatever.
Who?
Is that his name?
Alex Saar.
Not Alex Saar, the other player who you think.
Wait.
Who you think Houston's going to draft?
Reed Shepard.
Reed Shepard. There
his,
we go.
His dad
Nailed
is
it.
Jeff Shepard, was part of the 96, 97, whatever
Pearl
year they
Jam
won the
played
championship.
On 10. Reed Shepard, if internally they're like, our stats love Reed Shepard.
Well,
And
everyone's
then they.
stats love Reed Shepard, for the record. Like, every single person I talk to at Sloan, 100% unanimous.
But if they're like, we love this person internally, and we're seeing from Kevin Pelton's rankings the same thing, it's sort of just like a reinforcement of what they're thinking.
Yeah, but I suppose it's a bit of a sanity check from that standpoint. All right, anyways, my actual sleepers in this year's draft,
Okay.
besides the possible number three pick, Johnny Furphy.
Only you would take credit for the third pick in the draft.
Oh, but when you
you're
have
like,
him,
I
like,
freaking called it third pick in the draft.
when you have him like by far number one, like that means something.
I mean, the third, it's like Luka, you're like, nailed it.
I mean, am I not?
I've
two teams passed on Luka, and a third traded him, and he had the best projection ever in my database. Ever. Excluding nobody.
Didn't stop him from sucking in the finals.
That's a real victory lap for you. Think Vlade Divac is out there like, see, I told you. You got blown by constantly in the finals. I knew.
It's Marvin Bagley in the league.
He is in the league. He plays for the Washington Wizards.
So barely.
So, yes, he's technically in the league. Johnny Furphy, an Australian wing from Kansas, is number 5 in my projections. He is number 18 in our top 100. Seems like some buzz lately that he could go in the lottery.
Okay.
Maybe
There's
even
big
not at the
Furphy
back
hype.
End,
Okay.
End of the lottery. So that seems maybe to match up with his stats. Cam Christie from Minnesota, the younger brother of the Lakers, Max Christie, 32nd in our top 100. I have him 12th overall.
Okay.
As a one and done. And then one of the interesting ones, this is not someone I was super familiar with their game until starting to run. He started popping the projections, is Jalen Wells from Washington State. It was a fairly fascinating story. He played his first 2 years at Sonoma State, JC, transferred to Wazoo, played 1 year there, really shot the ball well, about 42% from three. And he is 47 in our top 100, 22 in my projections. And like all his comparable players went on to long NBA careers as good shooting wings. So,
like who, which types of players?
I want to say like Alan Crabb might have been in there.
Okay. Just like a solid role player who can shoot the ball.
Yep.
The exact type of player that UW has not had for like
oh,
the
has
last
never
8 years.
No, yeah.
Not
yeah.
never.
Once upon
used
a
to
time.
Be a really good shooting team for
Scott
a long
Suggs, CJ
time.
Wilcox, Trey
Husky's
Simmons.
Always had shooters. It was just like end of Romar into Hopkins, then kind of got out of shoot.
Correct.
That's interesting, though, for Jalen Wells out of Wazoo.
Yeah.
Is he projected as a second round pick?
Yeah, he's like he said, number 47 in the top 100.
Where's Bronny in your top 100?
Bronny
Or in your
is
the statistical projections?
Number 45.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a little bit like there's a regression factor that sort of assumes if you declare for the draft, you're an NBA caliber player, as we sort of fill in when you haven't played as many minutes. Like he hasn't. He does have some projections from the Nike EYBL AAU tournament that are in here in addition to his freshman year at USC. But it's not like, I mean, I watched Bronny at the Hoop Summit. He really helped his team. He was key to winning that game for the USA. And I do think he's better than he looked last year at USC. Like it's still unusual for a guy who's like a, you know, aspirationally a 3-and-D role player to come out after 1 year. He wouldn't do it if he wasn't Bronny. But
teams are treating it like, or not teams. Team. I think teams are probably taking it seriously.
Yes.
Fans are treating it like a joke, though.
Correct.
That the Lakers would be, but he is a reasonable player to select.
It's interesting because there has been this degree of nepotism in the NBA before. Or the degree of nepotism that people think is happening with Bronny has happened just with significantly less famous players. Like J.R. Smith's brother was maybe the worst player in recent NBA history.
Who took him?
I mean, he
the
wasn't
Knicks
drafted, but
the...
he played on the Knicks. Also,
okay.
Dame Lillard's
brother.
Cousin.
Oh, wait, who's Dame Lillard's cousin?
Now I've already forgotten his name. This is you can see how much I'm slipping already.
Yeah, washed. But like Thanasis, would Thanasis be on a roster if he wasn't Giannis's brother?
At one point, yes. At this point, no.
Yeah. I mean, that's fine. Like those players, this is a little bit different. But the reality is a random roster spot's not that valuable. And if there's a player who's within your top 60, they're worth drafting. So. Okay. Well, we will keep an eye. I'm going to be in Nashville. I'm probably not going to see you, but if I have any downtime, I'll keep an eye out for you on the broadcast.
I appreciate that. Keljan Blevins was Dame's cousin. He averaged 4.3 points in his one G League season. And spent 2 years on the Blazers roster on a two-way.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, wrapping up these somber toasts, we're also sending well wishes to UW legend Nate Robinson. This had somehow, I think, you know, kind of escaped my notice, but an excellent men's health article that I saw today by Tyler Ricky Tynes, it's just out now, detailing Nate Robinson's battle against kidney disease that will eventually require a transplant, and also why it's disproportionately more difficult for Black people to get kidney transplants. So we'll link that in the show notes, but definitely must read.
Yeah, that seemed like a pretty devastating story for Nate Robinson, who's still very young.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this occurred in his 30s, not long after he was out of the NBA. Well, this week, we again do not have any cookies. In despite my best efforts, I went to two different locations today. One of them was not open, sadly, when I made it there. The other one, De Laurenti, was open, but it was the end of the day. There was so many people at the market, and they were
I can't
out
believe
of there.
It wasn't that sunny of a day, but it was still a summer Sunday at the market. The fact that you fared that, people might think we're getting into abandoned search territory.
No,
you put it, you competed.
And I did have two of their cookies, but it just wasn't the signature chocolate chip, and they both had nuts, so I wasn't going to be able to bring them over to your house safely.
What cookies did you have?
Peanut butter and hazelnut chocolate chip.
Okay. But they didn't have normal, just plain chocolate chip.
They were sold out, yeah. And it was late in the day, so I'll make it there when it's not a summer Sunday. I got to be honest. Obviously, like, I intellectually know, hey, the Pike Place Market is probably going to be busier on a Sunday than when I go on, like, a Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. in November. But the degree to which there was gridlock just trying to drive past it was a shock to me.
I mean, I can also go when I go into the office sometime in July as well.
Yeah, we're going to get it done. We're
and just walk over and get cookies. The other location you went to, where is that? That's in West Seattle, you said, at the farmer's market.
Well, yeah, West Seattle Street Fair, which I had several of their cookies last week. I just wasn't able to make it over to your house to complete that handoff.
Got it. And what location is that?
That's Pinkney's Cookies.
Okay.
I think they've got a more fancy name than that.
More fancy.
Pinkney
name.
Cookie Cafe. Pinkney.
Okay. But when you got it at the farmer's market, it doesn't really feel like.
Like a cafe?
You weren't at a cafe.
This is technically true. That is fair. Anyways. Well, I will be trying to pick up some Levain Bakery cookies while I'm in
there
New
we
York
go.
Later this week. So we can trade nuts on those ones after you had them previously. I don't know if I'm going to. What was your story about eating them on the plane?
Oh,
That you got the
I think,
wrong one,
yeah,
right?
I ended up getting the one with nuts, like the hazelnut one, on the plane.
Well, thankfully, I don't have to worry about that.
You would be fine.
With that, it's time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at ya.
Last week, I told you about how there was plenty of room on the bandwagon for all of us. But what I failed to realize during that take was that there isn't going to be any sort of bandwagon because this team absolutely, wholly, and completely fucking sucks. They rode an easy division, a papier-mâché roster, and a punching way above their weight class pitching staff to a 10-game division lead. But enough about last week, because the Don't Look Now team happens to be in their division, and they can actually beat good teams, unlike this god-awful Mariners team. And all of a sudden, the Mariners have the second-best run differential in the division, and the Stros have a favorable upcoming schedule. Fangraphs tried to warn us all along, and unlike ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton, those nerds are never wrong. What once was a double-digit division lead is now a farce, and I'm calling it right here, right now, June 23rd. There is a 0% chance that the Mariners are ahead in the division by the All-Star break. The two seed will be lucky if they're not selling off this roster for parts at the end of July, because right now the Mariners have me talking like Jim E. Mora. Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope we can win a game.
I mean, here's the reason I'm not terribly concerned about the last five games is, like, what's gone wrong is almost entirely the Mariners starting pitching. Like, there was the George Kirby game on, what was that, Friday night? That was a pretty frustrating one for Kirby to give up two runs on a homer in seven innings, and the Mariners still to lose that game, in particular with the inability to get anyone home with first and third with nobody out, I believe, in the top of the eighth. Like, that was a frustrating one. I don't expect that. So over their last turn through the rotation, Brian Wu coming back after this long absence, Luis Castillo and Bryce Miller all had 6+ ERAs in their last starts. That's more starter games with a 6+ ERA than they had the first 16 games in June, which somehow even Jonathan Diaz and Emerson Hancock avoided that. So, like, look, Castillo, Miller, and Wu are going to be fine. And the bats have not been good enough, but they weren't the reason that the Mariners struggled in Cleveland and in Miami.
Let me just break down for you what you just said. I'm not concerned because the Mariners are only good at one thing, and now they're not good at that thing. That's why you're not concerned?
Yeah, because that's not a sample size that's meaningful whatsoever. The one start apiece.
What the thing that does matter, if we can agree on this, is run differential. Do you think that run differential matters?
Yes, I mean, I agree that the Mariners are not that good of a team. What's changed in the past week?
Here's what I'm not nervous. The pitching staff is now bad. They still can't hit, and we all acknowledge they're not that good of a team.
Again, no one said the pitching staff is now bad. The pitching staff had a bad 5 days, and the starters in particular.
But also, they had a bad 5 days against the Marlins.
The Houston Astros are really fucking good. That's scary, I agree. Like, they now have a better run differential than the Mariners. Like,
yes.
The Astros were kind of the sleeping dog that you were hoping to tiptoe by to win the division, and all of a sudden that dog woke up and is chasing you.
How many teams make the playoffs in the MLB?
Well,
per league,
12, but six per league.
The Mariners are now eighth in run differential in the American League.
Okay, I mean, it's not a good place to be, but some of the other factors you need to consider are: what are the schedules the rest of the season? What are the underlying projections below coming into the season? And all of those things suggest that the Mariners are going to be better going forward than the Kansas City Royals, despite the fact that the Royals have a better run differential than them.
They're kind of lucky that they've moved ahead of the Royals. Still an 80% chance of making the playoffs.
All those things suggest they're going to be better than the Boston Red Sox, despite the Red Sox having a better run differential to them. So yes, as you say, still an 80% chance of making the playoffs, because even though the division odds have gone way down, they've plummeted from 90% to 70% in 5 days since we last recorded. Like, the wild card odds have gone up a little bit. Because if the reason you don't win the division is because the Astros are really good, not because you collapse, then you probably are going to make it as a wild card.
Oh, it's also the Royals are 3-7 in their last 10. I mean, like,
the Royals are regressing to the mean? Who could have seen that coming?
The series against the Twins is huge for multiple reasons. Obviously, they're a good team. And then also in the wild card, you know, if the Mariners get beat 2 out of 3, get swept in that series, it's a pretty bleak scenario. Houston is going to be in the mix. Kansas City will see. Baltimore is a lock, basically.
Well, that's the other thing is what we're probably going to see in the AL West is the difference between being the 3 seed and hosting, I guess, Minnesota or Kansas City or maybe Houston, one of those teams. Or if you lose out, you drop to the 5th seed and have to go play at Baltimore in the the play-in.
So I think, yeah, I think we agreed two or three are solid places to be.
Winning the division is a solid place to be, yes.
Yes. Is that right, though?
Yeah. It's three versus six, four versus five in the wild card round. And Baltimore is locked into, or New York, if in the
Is
unlikely
locked into
scenario
four.
that
So
Baltimore,
they want to be the sixth seed,
you would
ideally.
rather be the sixth seed than the fifth seed. I think so, yes. Which this came up a couple years ago. The Mariners didn't try to manipulate it at all when it was the difference between playing Toronto or Cleveland. Was Cleveland the AL Central winner that
That
year?
sounds right, yeah.
But it wasn't that big of a difference. Like, the two best teams in the AL clearly are Baltimore and the Yankees. So. All right, well, the happier news on the injury front, Jorge Polanco is scheduled to
Oh,
join the Mariners Monday in Tampa.
happier news.
We're going to see how they make room for him. I don't think you can send down Ryan Bliss after this series he
Absolutely
just
not. No
had.
way. No way.
And if Bliss plays more as kind of a right-handed platoon guy in the infield, then you can just stick Dylan Moore as a right-handed platoon guy in the outfield, which makes a lot of sense. Or actually give Dylan Moore a day off at some point here, which might be useful for him rather than playing every single day. And then Gregory Santos threw a bullpen session while the team was in Tampa Bay, a live bullpen session against hitters. Only 10 pitches. He's scheduled to do another one of those with more pitches and then potentially go out and start his rehab process. But the Mariners bullpen could definitely use Santos.
That would
Indoor
be
Gabe Spire,
massive.
yeah, who is also begun his throwing program as he's rehabbing his injury.
If Polanco comes up, it's Victor Robles' job, right? Victor Robles. Like
You think
that's
he's the
who's
guy who
going.
goes down? I think it's,
Yeah.
we discussed this in the Discord. I think we kind of agreed it's probably Tyler Locklear. Hasn't played a ton since Ty France came back. And he's also like, you're like Robles, you have to designate for assignment. Locklear, you just send down and give him a chance to play every day.
Yeah, that's fine.
And he just doesn't bring much defensive versatility. Like Ty France, there was a report that he was taking ground balls at third base over this series. So you've got the potential that, like, if they wanted to play France at third base to get Locklear in the lineup at first base, that's an option.
It
But
probably makes sense, but realistically speaking, Victor Robles is not going to be on this roster at the end of the year.
it seems unlikely. Obviously, the deep scenario that has been discussed by third Pelton brother Zach Jubal at length in the Discord is, at some point, the Mariners may have to move on from Mitch Haniger, Jose Abreu style. I'm not to that point yet, but it is a consideration, I suppose.
They don't save any money though doing that, right?
No, unless he, unless there's some sort of an offset. I don't know how the rules work on offset,
It's
and he goes and
basically
signs with
just
another team.
Mitch Haniger is probably not a Major League Baseball player at this point.
And the Fangraphs projections still like his production the rest of the year pretty well. That's very optimistic, I would say.
And when you have Mitch Haniger, you feel like you need to play him.
Correct. In a way that you wouldn't with Victor Robles, who is going to provide you some value as a defensive replacement, a pinch runner, things of that nature.
Now, honestly, it would be more helpful if, like, all these players who we're talking about are all infielders. Obviously, Dylan Moore can slide to the outfield, but Locklear, Bliss, Polanco, players like that, all infielders that you really want to keep on the roster and who are part of Bliss and Locklear, who are part of the plans long term. It's unfortunate that neither of them are outfielders.
Oh, well, right-handed hitting outfielder specifically, because the left-handed hitting outfielder is doing just great. Did
There we
you see
go.
who was hitting cleanup today
Was
on the
it
strength of
Canso?
his mammoth home run on Saturday afternoon? It was, in fact, Dominic Canso.
I was at Children's Baseball Weekend in Central Washington. I saw none of it.
You were seeing some Italians play baseball,
There we
but
go.
probably not as much power as from Dom Canso.
I saw one Italian play baseball. Are we going to talk soccer at all, by the way?
I presumed we would talk about that in the Sounders section,
Okay.
but if you want to talk, if you want to talk about it in the Italian section,
My Italian section, this is an you're gonna be shocked. Which Italians? more Lucas on the U.S. national team than on the Italian national team.
Is that true?
Luca Della Torre came on, and I was like, there's a Luca and an Italian. I was like, God damn, United States of America. I was already, I'm back. I am in on the United States of America for soccer, but now I am really in.
He's not actually Italian, is he?
I think his dad is Spanish.
That's interesting. His birth name is Luca with an S, but he goes by Luca without it. Yes, his dad is Spanish.
I didn't see that. Lucas De La Torre.
If Wikipedia is correct here.
I mean, that's also what every single person thinks Luca's name is. So,
well,
a lot of people think my name's Tristan, though.
I was
going
to say. I can't remember where it was I mentioned in the chat that I came across a Tristan.
Did you really?
Yeah.
In real life?
IRL
Tristan. IRL Tristan? I don't buy it.
My son's name is also Tristan. We also got the reminder of Tristan McKenzie with an O last week when the Mariners hit him hard.
Luca was like, are you upset that the Mariners are scoring off Tristan McKenzie? And I was like, he's a heretic. I hate Tristan McKenzie. No this relation.
This reminds me of one of my favorite news radio jokes when Catherine is talking about how the only correct way to spell it is with a C.
With a C.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Catherine Hepburn, and like she's referred to derisively because of the fact that her name is spelled with a K. The other thing I was going to say in the Mariners, by the way, you know what the real problem is? Along the lines of your bandwagon comment, everyone looked. We forgot to don't look now. I don't mean that as serious analysis.
I don't think that's true, though, because A, not that many people were looking. B,
oh, I think baseball, a lot of people were looking. I disagree with that assessment.
The impact that baseball has is still like the Mariners could be 10 games over 500, and the amount that people talk about baseball is basically the same as if the Mariners are at 500 or 10 games below 500, and maybe actually slightly less than if they were really bad. Because complaining about baseball is a tried and true American and Seattle, Washington thing to do. They weren't quite good enough, and it's not September or October. So I don't know if I do buy that anybody looked. Unrelated to that, though, baseball tournament was in Ellensburg, Washington. I stayed this weekend in Yakima, Washington, the Palm Springs of Washington.
Oh, wow.
And so the first game was at 8 a.m. I'm driving from, had to arrive at 7 a.m. So I'm driving from Yakima to Ellensburg at 6:30 a.m. this morning. It was already completely sunny outside. I understood how farmers do it. But I wanted to note, there was a person who offhandedly went to Central and is from Eastern Washington, said that was their least favorite part of the drive to Eastern Washington is the Ellensburg to Yakima part of the drive. And I could not disagree more. It is the best part of the drive to Eastern Washington, Ellensburg to Yakima. When you start going up the hill after you pass Ellensburg and you're in those little mountains, it is amazing. It's majestic. And coming back in particular, as you're going down the hill and you can see Ellensburg in the fields below you, if it's sunny outside, there is no better part of the drive. I listened to Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen on CD in the van.
I think you specified that it was by Bruce Springsteen as if there was another Born to Run.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like Let It Be.
The Replacements?
Yes.
I'm reading.
I'm reading Our Band Could Be Your Life. So I just got done with The Replacements.
I was gonna say you're referencing The Replacements. What's happening? What is going on right now? Anyway, Kevin Pelton's talking about the Mats.
The Mission to Burma is definitely the one I'm like, oh, this is a band.
Mission
of all the band.
But the listening to that album as the sun is rising at like 6:30 a.m., kind of extraordinarily loud, from Yakima to Ellensburg, I know this is a bold thing to say. I was like, I think Born to Run might be the best record of all time.
Wow.
It used to be my favorite Bruce Springsteen record.
I get what you're saying. I mean, the hits off Born to Run are amazing. I haven't listened to it recently enough that I can speak credibly to the album cuts on Born to Run.
I mean, what are the album cuts? 10th Avenue Freeze Out, Backstreets, Night, She's the One, Jungle Land.
All right, okay. You're making
it's like
points.
Eight songs, and I didn't mention Thunder Road and Born to Run. Even like you listen to
Meeting
like
Across the River,
Meeting Across the River, honestly, in the context of the record, totally bangs. It's like you wouldn't listen to Meeting Across the River probably on its own necessarily. It's not a single in that same way, but top to bottom, how about this? I'll revise that statement. I never thought I would, because around this time of year, Born in the USA usually ticks up, not even close, not even in the conversation, right? Previously, I would have been like Darkness on the Edge of Town, Nebraska, something like that. I have to boldly say that Bruce Springsteen's most critically, we're critically acclaimed and successful, because Born in the USA is the biggest record, right?
I mean, I don't know. How are you determining success then?
But sales-wise, Born in the USA is a bigger record.
Correct.
Born to Run is the exact perfect point where critical acclaim plus success met each other. And I'm here to boldly say that record is good.
Well,
it was just actually, honestly.
Why didn't you put that in the hot takes?
In the van, I'm listening to CDs a lot. And most of the time, I'm like, actually listening to full albums sucks. Me as a high schooler was wrong. But Born to Run, top to bottom, I was just like, keep it coming, Bruce. God damn. Anyway.
Now, Born in the USA is the only album, Bruce Springsteen album cover that you typically recreate on our Instagram each 4th of July. But I will say, Born to Run to me is a more iconic cover.
Oh, Darkness on the Edge of Town also. Like Bruce with the white t-shirt and the chest hair. Come on.
Yeah, that's true. What about The River? Speaking of white t-shirts.
The river
is
good.
I know, he gets that out of white t-shirt. That's the
It's like a little zoom
flannel.
In, though. Yeah. Anyway.
Bruce
I just
Springsteen,
I really,
well managed. That's our conclusion here.
Well managed, yeah. I listened to, on the way there, we were listening to East 1999, Bone Thugs and Harmony. That one randomly came up. We've exhausted both of the Tyler, the Creator records that I have the CDs of. And I'm like, they're both good. Like, Flower Boy is obviously excellent, but top to bottom, Born to Run, hot damn. Anyway, I just had to get off these hot takes about a record from 1976.
But also hot takes about the drive from Ellensburg to Yakima, which I assume that part of the frustration is, like, you're uphill for a long period of time. And if you get behind a semi that's going slowly,
there's two lanes.
It can be a very frustrating drive.
There's two lanes. There's a passing lane.
But the view is incredible. I agree with that.
Oh.
Well, speaking of the Palm Springs of Palm Springs, or of California, I suppose.
Yeah. Wait. Do that. Restart that again.
No.
Yeah, such a perfect transition.
It was intentional. The Palm Springs of Palm Springs. Coachella Valley in the Calder Cup Finals. It's also all gone to shit in the past 5 days, much like with the Mariners. After taking a 2-1 series lead in the AHL Finals, the Firebirds dropped their next two home games by identical 3-2 finishes to the Hershey Bears, falling behind, also wild 3-2 in the series, headed back to Hershey. And now if the Coachella Valley is going to win the Calder Cup title, they will have to win both Game 6, scheduled for Monday night, and a potential Game 7 on Wednesday in Hershey.
You know what? The Edmonton Oilers have taught us that anything is possible.
That's true.
So,
don't write a team off.
I'm not giving up on the Coachella Valley.
When is that Game 7? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow night.
Okay. The NHL draft.
One of the biggest games in hockey history. I've been told.
Not as big as the Vancouver. Did Vancouver play in the finals that year?
When they flipped the bitch?
In 2012, yes.
I have no idea.
Yeah, that one's lost to history.
Boston? Was it Boston?
Oh, it probably was Boston. Zdeno Chara, I'm sure he was involved. The NHL draft starts this Friday at the Sphere in Las Vegas. The Kraken will hold the number 8 pick, as well as 2 in each of the second and third rounds. Our ESPN.com mock draft has the Kraken taking Denver freshman defenseman Ziv Buyum. So they suggest that a defenseman is the biggest need for the Kraken, which, sure, that all sounds reasonable. They've used their high lottery picks on offensive players in Matty Beniers and Shane Wright. So that checks out. All right, Seattle Sounders. Is the Mariners are down. Obviously, the Sounders must be up, sort of. A pair of
Sort of.
they twice overcame two goal deficits to earn 4 points from their two matches last week. Wednesday at Houston, they saw Latif Blessing score twice in the first half for the Dynamo. They pulled one back through the red hot Pauly Rothrock in the 57th minute, then equalized with his prep teammate Jackson Reagan scoring his first career MLS goal 6 minutes later. Sounders very fortunate to get that draw in Houston with just 1.1 XG to 2.5 expected goals for Houston, which had a 17-9 advantage in terms of shots. On Saturday, back home, all the scoring happened starting in the 66th minute. Dallas scored twice in a 5 minute stretch, but the Sounders answered with Raul Diaz in the 78th minute, then saw Jordan Morris score in both the 88th to equalize and the 94th to
Wow.
win it. As they
Hello.
came all the way back, it's the first two-goal comeback to win by the Sounders since the 2020 Western Conference Final against Minnesota United. That I think we did a semi-emergency pod after, did we not?
Have no idea.
I'm pretty sure we
No
recorded that
recollection.
night, deep during COVID. This time,
Was that deep during COVID?
I mean,
It's like no fans or.
oh yeah, definitely no fans. It was
Wow. Okay.
pre-vaccine. It was like full second wave or third wave or whatever you want to say.
You're the one who's reading the punk book. You should know the waves. No.
Touche. This time, expected goals was all Sounders 2.0 XG to just 0.7 for FCD, with an incredible 26 shots for the Sounders, 9 of those on goal. The bad news is the Sounders needed those points just to keep pace in the Western Conference playoff race. They are still tied for ninth in points with Vancouver, which has a match in hand, and 2 points back of eighth. So it's important to get full points at home this Saturday against the lowly Chicago Fire, who are currently last in the East with a minus 11 goal differential. Seattle Reign saw a second consecutive home draw. Bethany Balser converted an early penalty won by Jordan Heidema that also produced a red card for Louisville to give the Reign the lead for 87 minutes. But shorthanded Louisville equalized in the 7th minute of stoppage time to force the Reign to settle for a single point. On Sunday, the Rose will travel to Gotham FC to face Rose Lavelle and Emily Sonnet for the first time since they signed with Gotham this offseason, as well as the first meeting between these two teams since they squared off in last year's NWSL championship game won by Gotham. Despite the super team expectations, Gotham sits fourth in the standings with a modest +5 goal differential. Seattle Storm, after losing at Wednesday in Las Vegas, finally got this long WNBA record 9-game homestand underway on Sunday afternoon. Mentioned earlier that they were celebrating the 25th anniversary. Had, I think, 10 or 11 of those players in attendance today. It was good to see Tina Thompson and Adia Barnes, Tamika Johnson, someone who was a little bit of a surprise that she cracked the top 25, the only triple double in Storm history. And then obviously Sue Bird and all the current members of the team, as well as Noel Quinn, who was part of the 25th anniversary team.
They did like a team, like the 25 best players in Storm history.
Correct. Yeah, voted by fans.
Okay.
Kamila Vejechkova was robbed.
Ugh.
So anyways, playing against Connecticut, as we said, they were 13-1 to start the season, lost Friday night in Vegas, which the Aces have now won two in a row since Chelsea Gray returned to their lineup, looking much friskier. Storm decided today to change their starting lineup. Jordan Horston getting her first start of the year in place of Victoria Vivians at small forward. This is the lineup that we expected to see coming into the season. But Vivians had played pretty well, and Horston had played so well off the bench that Noel Quinn had been reluctant to move her into the starting lineup and change her role, but said that she really liked her matchup against Dawana Bonner. And that paid off. Dawana Bonner scoreless in the first half of this game. So was Dejanay Carrington. Connecticut still led big early. Storm really struggled to deal with their physicality to start, but they adjusted, and the defense in this game was just outstanding. Ezzie Meghbogor was swallowing up the paint. Jordan Horston was creating havoc on the perimeter with deflections and steals. Nneka Ogwumike was handling Alyssa Thomas one-on-one. Thomas had a season-low 3 assists, and the Storm held Connecticut to 61 points, 8 fewer than they had scored in any game this season. a big 17-4 run in the second quarter to get back ahead. And then they just kind of slowly pulled away. And this didn't end up being a particularly close down the game down the stretch. And easily the biggest and best win for the Storm this season, I would say. Their first win against a team ahead of them in the standings. And they had been 0-4 against those teams and 2-6 against teams 500 or better, with the wins coming against the Aces and then the Phoenix Mercury without Brittany Griner. So this was sort of
like one of the better wins across for an underdog team, I suppose. Across,
weirdly, they were favorite in this
year.
They were 1.5 point favorites. That surprised me coming into this one, but Vegas knows.
But this was one of the best wins you could have in the WNBA this year.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, given how well the Sun have played, they've now dropped down into third in the WNBA standings because they've got fewer wins than New York and Minnesota, who also have three losses. I guess they're tied with Minnesota, I should say, for second right now. But you look at Connecticut's losses, like I said, they'd only lost once all season before Friday. That came against New York at home in the Commissioner's Cup, then at Las Vegas and against the Storm. So, you know, it's the two teams in last year's finals, and then the Storm have beaten Connecticut. Yeah. So a very exciting way to start this long road trip on Thursday, or this long homestand, I should say. Thursday, it's Caitlin Clark and the Fever coming to town for her second visit. And it's a very different Indiana team than we saw the first time when they were off to this terrible start. Just had a brutal schedule in terms of playing a lot of games, playing the best teams in the league repeatedly. That's kind of flipped the last couple of weeks. They've had an opportunity to practice. They played some weaker opponents. And lo and behold, the Fever were on a four-game winning streak. Coming into today, they played on ESPN at Chicago, led nearly the entire way. But Angel Reese, with 23 points, 16 rebounds, led a comeback to give Chicago the one-point win. Caitlin Clark also had a double-double in that one, 17 points, a career-high 13 assists for her. So we've really kind of seen her settle into the role that we expected coming into this season, where she's scoring a lot. She's turning it over a fair bit, but she's finding her teammates as well. And Aaliyah Boston has been the big difference. After she played so poorly to start the season, she's back at an all-star level of play the last couple weeks. So sadly, I will not be there for that one because I'm going to be back in New York. But Jane will be in the house.
There we go.
For Caitlin Clark.
It means we get to hear Jane's thoughts on basketball, women's basketball in particular.
Oh, I'm sure they will be well informed. After Indiana, the Storm have a home set Saturday and Monday against the reeling Dallas Wings, who have lost 11 games in a row.
I mean, that's literally two wins, right? You pen those wins in.
We'll see how healthy Dallas is. Satu Sabali is not going to be back, presumably before the Olympic break, but they did get Natasha Howard, who was also part of that Storm 25th, all-time top 25, back in the lineup to go along with Arike Ogunbowale, who's been leading the WNBA in scoring. But then they lost Maddie Segrist, who had a nice season for them. So a lot of injury issues for Dallas.
Obviously, looking like some wins on the horizon for the Storm, but at this point, being 10-6, fourth in the WNBA, generally about where we expected them to be. Maybe a little bit surprising, the teams that are ahead of them, especially the Lynx being one of those and not the Aces. But I think things have kind of shaken out the way that we expected them to look overall for the Storm.
Well, I'd say the worrisome thing is that Las Vegas is coming. Like, we know that they're going to be much better than they have been this season. So, like, right now, you would say probably the most likely outcome of the season ended today is Vegas in fourth, Storm in fifth, have to go to Vegas for a first round series.
Yeah.
Which would, like, I think you hope to play Vegas in the playoffs, but like maybe in the semifinals, not in the first round.
How many games are the first round series?
Three, but it goes home, home, away.
Three.
So to host a game, you have to win a game in Las Vegas.
That's going up. I wish you could just like fast forward sometimes. Where it's like, you know, the WNBA is not going to keep a three game. As these TV rights keep going up and the value of these games goes up, they're going to have a motherfucking three game first round series. That's a waste. Five at minimum.
Well, the other series are only five, so I don't think they're going beyond that at any time soon.
Those series are going to seven long term. Just mark it, set it in stone. They're going to seven games. They're not going to keep it at five.
I
It's
mean, the
way too
WNBA
valuable.
does have some calendar issues because you don't want to play into college, women's college season or men's college season. And there's always so early you can do it on the front side because of the women's college season. So that is a challenge.
You could even hypothetically, I mean, you don't want to show. How long is the regular season? 50 games?
40 games.
40 game regular season? They'll figure it out.
Now that the money is there, I do
There's a
think that.
reality of the NBA does the same thing. Hockey does the same thing. The sports that are structured in the same way do basically the same thing. As TV rights money goes up, like again, a three game series is obscene. You could have a team make the playoffs and then never play a home game.
Most teams make the playoffs and never play a home game. Most of the lower seeds, not most of the
Not
teams,
happening. Not
obviously.
happening long term. Guaranteed home games.
That certainly would be appealing to move it to a 5-5-5 format, I would say. So it's Minnesota that's the team that's throwing things off here. Like, we knew Connecticut was probably still going to be pretty good. I had them third coming into the season and the Storm fourth. And Minnesota being so good is what potentially slides the Storm out of home court in the first round. But a long ways to go. Phoenix is also playing way better since they got Brittney Griner and Rebecca Allen back. And, injuries have been a defining part of the WNBA season. So we're going to see more of those, surely, unfortunately, going forward. And then we have this 1 month break, which will be interesting to see.
Oh, that's also like that's just for this year, but long term.
I mean, it's WNBA players are still going to play, want to play in the Olympics.
Yeah, but the Olympics only happen every 4 years.
I thought you were saying that it was going away, though.
Mean, every 4 years they'll have a 1 month break. Makes it
Yeah.
much
You've also got
easier.
the World Cup every 4 years as well on the back end of the schedule. So there are considerable challenges.
I'm telling you, as the money goes up, all of those things fade away. Every other issue fades away.
I don't think they do because the availability of slots to broadcast games doesn't
The
necessarily
value
go
of these
up.
games is way higher, though.
But the value of those games is during this period of time where, there is no college basketball to fill inventory.
I agree. They could just finish it before college basketball, though. When do the WNBA championships happen? Like September?
In years where there's no Olympics, they typically do, but this year's finals will be played in October.
I mean, if you could have a season that started like more or less similar, like close to when they do, like right after the college basketball season and have it end in August, if you could have the WNBA season wrapped before football starts, that's like the ideal schedule. Pretty
But
tight. But
when are you starting?
no, I'm saying it's too tight to figure out. But that is the ideal schedule.
Well, I mean, that was what they originally did, yes, was played the finals in August.
But there's still demand in September. Like, obviously there's football on a lot of days, but before the
Yeah.
NBA season starts,
That's why
there's
I'm not
often.
saying football is the issue.
Yeah.
College basketball is the issue.
College basketball doesn't really start in earnest until like November, though.
I agree, but in Olympic years, like, you're already pushing well into October.
Also, I'm just going to be real with you. WNBA basketball is going to tick to become more popular than college, women's college basketball. This is not the
I think
same. People would have
eventually,
said the
but
same
it's
shit
going to
about
take a
John
while.
Wooden or whatever and be like, oh, the pros will never make it. People only care about colleges. Caitlin Clark is not playing in Iowa anymore. You understand?
I do, but there's going to be another Caitlin Clark
And she'll also play in the NBA.
in the
That was
WNBA.
my description of. We should start referring them both as the NBA dash M, NBA dash, or WNBA MNBA.
Many people do that in the women's basketball community, refer to it as the MNBA.
I was saying that USA Soccer needs a Caitlin Clark still. I don't think Pulisic is it. Like, USA Soccer still needs the one player to just be like, everybody fucking cares about this player.
Well, speaking of scheduling, A change to the UW men's basketball schedule going forward is they exercise their option to withdraw from their contract to play the final two games of an annual home and home series with Gonzaga that was available to them because of the coaching change to Danny Sprinkle. Maybe not terribly surprising as they kind of figure out what scheduling is going to look like in the Big Ten, but hopefully not a long-term change for the Huskies and the Zags.
Goodbye, Gonzaga. We don't talk to people as poor as you anymore. We're in the Big Ten now. We're going to take over this whole tournament. Thank you.
All right. Let's all remain calm. Let's make the NCAA tournament one time. It was a big recruiting weekend for UW football. They were hosting a number of players, had multiple commitments. As usual, way too early to get granular about those commitments, but positive to see the players are buying into the vision.
The Peloton cast. It's literally like the whole infrastructure has changed. You're just like, who cares? These players might play. They probably won't.
They'll probably end up transferring.
Yeah. It's so strange. It used to make so much sense. It never made sense to care about recruiting, but it made more sense to care about recruiting because it was like, these are players we'll eventually pay attention to. And now it's like, oh, did you know that player started at UW before they became a star at wherever? It would be like, oh, that's an interesting footnote.
Shouts to Puka Nacua.
Jeremy Bernard. No, Puka Nacua played.
I
here.
Know. I'm
That's
joking.
Not the same. But it was like when Jeremy Bernard went to Michigan State. It was like UW to Michigan State to UW to Alabama. And you're just like, have fun, Jeremy.
Look, he's very loyal to Kalen DeBoer. We didn't actually talk about Italian soccer. You just talked about a player on the USMNT named Luca.
I think that's all I have to say about Italian soccer. We'll
oh, wow.
Tomorrow. I don't know. I mean, I didn't have any particular thoughts after. I think this is
you
the
came
expanded.
Into the Discord with some thoughts.
It was a fine match. This is the expanded Euro, right? This is a larger Euro than it's been.
I don't know if it is. Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's been 24 for a while.
Okay. I just don't find group stage international soccer, for the most part, to be that interesting.
It was voted on in 2007 and or in 2008. So I don't know what year it actually started. Maybe 2012 was the first year they went to 24.
Okay. But you understand what I'm saying? It's like
there's not a lot of stakes. Given that, you know, 4 points for sure sees you through, basically.
It's kind of like you go from kind of like you can only embarrass yourself in the group stages. I mean, now that we're getting to the third match and it's actually deciding like who's moving on, the stakes are getting much higher and it's becoming more interesting. You go from that to all of the stakes in the next match.
That is undoubtedly true.
So but the way that, like, Italy wanted to win the game, but it just would be played so differently. I mean, honestly, they might have lost by a lot more if it was a knockout stage game. But it's kind of just like, we'll see once they start playing real teams with real stakes. That's my takeaway. Even so, I watched the U.S. versus Bolivia. It's like, U.S. looked good. I don't know.
So Italy's second place in Group B entering that final group stage game against Croatia, which only managed a 2-2 draw against Albania, much to Italy's benefit, ensuring that a draw, barring a Albania win over Spain by multiple goals in their simultaneous group stage finale, a draw will be sufficient to see Italy through in second place.
And can you remind me who they would play?
If they finish second, they would play Switzerland. If they finish third, it's a bit more complex. Depends on which other teams would advance from finishing third.
Okay.
So, there you go. Although a lot of teams already have 3 points that are in third place in their group, so maybe it isn't a sure thing that they would advance with 3 points.
Just win, baby.
Seems like just draw is what you
just
actually
draw,
do.
Baby.
Just result. All right, well, we'll be back with more of that next week. Had to record earlier this week, obviously, because of my travel. We'll probably be back to a more regular schedule next week when not only will the NBA draft have occurred, NBA free agency will not only be
Oh my
underway, but
God.
probably just about wrapped up by that point.
We got to
So
talk taco time soon, too.
we do. Do you want to reference quickly for anyone who's made it this far and didn't listen to the episode 2 weeks ago? A follow-up on the spicy tater fries and remind everyone where that is who didn't individually DM you, which was everyone already did.
Spicy Mexi fries at the Fairwood location in Renton. I honestly, they're 15 out of 10. They're
15
incredible.
out of 10.
No, they take Mexi fries, which are already great, to an even greater level. It's shocking that this hadn't happened already.
Let me tell you, I went to Taco Time in preparation for the fact that I thought we were going to be able to record last week, and the tater fries that I had were better than I remembered, I would say.
Wow. Okay.
That's how far I would go. And
We'll talk about the ice cream
had the
sandwich.
gelato ice cream sandwich, of course.
You had
But
the
yeah,
ice cream
we're gonna
sandwich.
save that one.
I was kind of fine on it.
We're gonna save that for discussion for Talking Taco Time.
But they really got one with the spicy Mexi fries. Come on. Just like roll it
It
out
is
everywhere,
actually
people.
like, why did it take so long to think of this one? There is an element of that.
Of that it's not actually like.
Because it's not creating like a new food item. It's just a different thing to sprinkle on it.
Yeah, just a different seasoning salt. But also, it's hilarious that this is a like Mexican inspired food, I think, is how you would describe it. And that they didn't come up with the idea of doing a spicy version until 2024.
Well, again, it's a Northwest take on Mexican food,
It's
and
actually,
that speaks for
I hate
itself.
to step on Talking Taco Time's toes, but it's the most Taco Time thing and the most Northwest thing about it that in 2024 they're like, maybe a spicy version.
It is
I'm
more
now
quintessentially
slightly
Northwest.
okay with that.
It is more quintessentially Northwest than using ranch dressing.
It's the most Seattle level of spice. That's what I'll say. When they say spicy, I think they might need to legally quote it.
On that note,
Thanks for listening.
thanks.